Hello and welcome to this latest episode of The Perfectly Imperfect Duo with Sari and Lily. Today we are going to talk about social anxiety. It's been requested specifically by someone, so we're going to start with that and just kind of, as ever, we don't have a plan of action. We're just going to both chat backwards and forwards on how we see it and what it means to us in the hope that it will give you some little insights of your own.
Yeah.
So where do we start?
Well, it's interesting because when I think of social anxiety, I don't know if I would have identified as struggling with social anxiety, because I think kind of like how I felt with health anxiety, a lot of it felt justified. So for me, well, I guess social anxiety could be come in so many ways, but one thing that really jumps out at me is the pre and post social event, you know, some of that anticipation anxiety, of wondering how many people are going to be there? Who am I going to connect with? Where do I fall in terms of likability? And I know for me, depending on my state of well-being, sometimes loud noises or light and stuff. And so sometimes I just, all of that anticipation anxiety, how is it going to go? You know, like the brain not liking uncertainty and unpredictability. Yeah. Like, am I going to be comfortable? What's it going to be?
It's like the illusion, isn't it? The illusionary event that you create before you even get there.
Yeah. So I think there's that, and then it would also be the post, and we can obviously go into more detail. But afterwards, I would often get stuck like ruminating and replaying and just mainly focusing on the negatives, you know, which I think we do. There could have probably been so many more, like, oh my gosh, this person was laughing and you had this great connection, but it would just be, and I guess I share this, that it seems so, I wasn't aware that, that this was unnecessary and just causing some suffering, because then I would often just feel the dread and the, you know, whether, oh, did you talk too much and blah, 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 like
going off too much.
And I think what I realized now too, is just because I would feel it strongly didn't mean it was true at all, but like I would often just, and then which kind of would create it again. Oh no, you know.
So after the event, even though we think we're remembering it really well, I mean, then you can put alcohol into the mix and that's a whole other story, but we think we're remembering it really well and we're not. It's just now a made up version of what we think we remember. I'm similar to you in that I never really associated myself with any form of social anxiety. But actually, when I look back, I did have. And I think this is quite a big misconception of people, that people that are socially anxious are introverted, quiet, shy. And so if someone comes across as outspoken, extroverted, you know, loud, that they're somehow not socially anxious. And I am the extrovert. I was the person who would, you know, be the first to crack a joke at a party, probably shout the loudest, be the silliest. And so people would never, ever have associated me as being socially awkward or anxious. But sometimes my extrovertedness, if that's a word, I don't even know if it is, was a defense mechanism because I felt socially anxious. And yet other people would never view that as socially anxious. It's like, oh, she's so outgoing. She's the life and soul. I'm actually bloody anxious. And then I'd have, you know, if I was drinking alcohol, then, you know, before you know it, my inhibitions would be gone and, you know, it suppresses that nervous system. And that's a whole other thing. But even, you know, without alcohol, I recognize now that the extrovertedness didn't come with ease. It was a symptom actually of probably feeling quite awkward and nervous.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I relate to that so much. I felt shy as a little girl. And I think my initial thought would be, oh, And I remember getting into this mode kind of like, well, now you're just going to do it. You're going to push yourself, and almost just like throwing myself into it and really overriding, I think, some of that hesitancy. And then I did the same thing where sometimes I would just use alcohol as a way to ease it. And I also loved being social, but also we were talking about the pre and the post anxiety, but during, sometimes I'd be so in my head too of thinking, I mean, and the alcohol was nice, it eased it up, you know, but I'd be, because it was so enjoyable when you're just present and you're not in your thoughts. But sometimes I would really take the fun out of it by, you know, if I didn't kind of get into the flow of it and find friends and just get out of my head, I would just be so aware of my thoughts and, you know, that it would take the fun out of it, you know, because I think there would be pressure, you know, which I think can happen with social anxiety, going back to like our early human days. It made so much sense because we had to be accepted by like our tribe and liked, and like it made sense that we try to look at people's facial expressions, like, are they liking me? Are they talking about me? But now it just, in our present day, we can jump to conclusions. It's interesting. My one of my good friends, our kids here in the United States don't have to wear masks anymore since like a month, and her daughter said, oh, mom, it feels so much better. Her daughter's 7-8, you know, I don't think people are talking about me anymore. Oh. And she shared that a lot of the kids, because they wear masks and like they have to get up closer to their friends sometimes to talk. So a lot of the kids would worry, are they talking about me? Like, is that why they're whispering? And I think as adults, if we sometimes see people huddled in a conversation, and depending on our state of mind, whether we're feeling confident or insecure, we make up these stories. Nobody likes me. They're not coming to talk to me. Those people are talking about me.
You know what's so interesting about that as well? It's not whether we're outgoing or shy or quiet or anywhere in between that makes the difference. So say, for example, someone like me that's really outgoing can get into insecure thinking about, oh my God, have I just crossed the line? Should I have shut up 10 minutes ago? Whereas somebody that's maybe really comes across as quite shy and has not spoken, is like, oh my God, I'm not saying anything. Are people going to think there's something wrong with me? So it doesn't matter where we are on that spectrum. We have the ability to feel insecure in that. Like there's no, and again, this is where I think there's a misunderstanding. Like, well, if I was more outgoing, I'd be fine. Well, I hate to say it, but you still have the capacity and the ability to have insecure thinking around that, which means that you wish you'd actually learn to keep your mouth shut, which is often what I would very regularly reflect and go, did I just take that one step too far then? Like, why didn't I rein it in just half an hour before? All would have been good. And it's not, and you know, again, it's the stories we have about ourselves, and then we almost play up to those. So we feel like it's an expectation then. And actually the expectation is us that we put on ourselves. So the first time I really experienced social anxiety and what I would have seen before was like the traditional way is, or, you know, the scripted way, if you like, is after lockdown. And I went out with some friends that I'd not seen for a long time. We went for a meal. I might have told you this before, Lily, I think, that, and we were sat there, and I'm probably, again, one of the more outgoing people of the group. And I just sat there, and it had been so long since I'd been out in a social for a meal and with friends. And I just sat there and I just sort of had this, you know, when you get the physical sit, it just felt really warm, like hot. So I just like, I'm not comfortable. Mm-hmm. And because I'm more grounded in myself now, I felt okay to just say, like, does anyone else feel really, I feel so socially awkward. I feel really uncomfortable right now. And the response around the table was like, oh, me too. Yeah, so do I. And it really struck me in that moment. It's like, now I feel socially awkward, but also, you know, being outgoing and talking and putting all that on, that also can feel socially awkward. But one thing I've realized now, that my story about myself has changed. So it's no longer on me to make other people have a good time by me being loud and outgoing. That the pressure of that is no longer there. And I'm much more likely now to sit in a group of people and just listen and just be present. Now, the past version of me would have seen that as me being boring, quiet, not as likable. Who's going to want to sit with me when I'm sat there reflective and quiet? Yeah. But I've realized now, actually, that doesn't matter to me so much, because it's much more freeing for me, because I can go and I can choose to be loud and outgoing and fun, but I can also choose to be quiet and sit and reflect. And I like both versions of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that so much. And I think I hear a lot of the last time I feel like I noticed, well, wordy entrance into my story, you know, being in the place that I'm being of well-being, not really struggling with any disordered anxiety, when it's going to be like a new thing, like a birthday party for a friend and I'm not going to know the other couples, or a bachelorette party and I'm not going to know the other people, I have some anticipation about it, you know, nothing disordered, but I think with me, I don't add on to it with my thinking. I accept that that's okay. You know, for example, when I was going to my friend's birthday, my stomach felt weird and I felt a bit quieter and nervous on the drive there, you know, and I knew that it would probably fade once I'd get present. And I was like you, where I think before I would just be like, well, here you're going to go, you're going to be on. And now I know that I can flow, that sometimes I can be quiet and listen. And sometimes I can get really excited and make a connection. The next thing I know, I'm maybe oversharing, or who knows, I mean, definition of oversharing, but I'm sharing and I'm connecting and we're talking about everything. And I think for me, what it is, yeah, it doesn't turn into a spiral or a judgment. If I have, you know, I think sometimes some of the anxious thinking about a social event will show up in like a little bit of a nervous stomach, you know, and just a little bit of tension. And it's like, all right, I'm experiencing that, full stop. I don't add on to it. I don't try to change it. I have this deep knowing that it's going to fade because I'm going to get present. And so it's okay to be there.
Yeah. And that physical sensation isn't coming from the fact that you are socially, I'm putting air quotations here for anyone that can't see, that you know, it doesn't mean you're socially awkward. It means you've just got a lot of thinking in that moment about where you are, how you fit. And again, it's all so internal. And you used the word a minute ago, acceptance. And again, for me, like a lot of this stuff comes down to acceptance of, if we're having a quieter night, if we would prefer to just sit and reflect, or if we're feeling a little bit more hyper and we want to be chatty, and it's like accepting whichever version of us shows up is actually perfectly okay. Because again, a lot of this for me, you know, there's not many people I've spoken to about social anxiety that actually it hasn't really just translated into having a deep worry about what other people think of you.
Yeah it is. And I think there's, you know, I think so much to when you shared in the challenge about the unpredictability and uncertainty, that if it's going to be a social situation, I know I guess for me, it's this understanding, that's just my brain. My wisdom is fine. She's like, I don't care how long it is. I don't care if you don't talk to anybody, you know, some of it is me of this story of that I might want to leave before it's a good time, you know, and then that comes with, oh, what are people going to think if I am ready to go? You know, but I'm also so aware, oh, it's just a story. And then I don't even do anything. But sometimes I remember, oh, when I get excited and I love to stay. And I know it's just kind of my brain being like, is everyone going to like me? Am I going to feel okay? And my wisdom, I feel like this deeper part of me that I'm just along for the ride. Like, it doesn't matter, even if I'm uncomfortable, even if I want to leave, even if I drink too much, even if I don't drink at all, if I'm quiet, like it's this deep knowing that I am okay. And that it is just, I'm here in this life for the experiences, even though sometimes in my brain, you know, it's interesting because I think the pandemic, I have been pushing myself to go out and to be social. I think since I was like a young girl, like I liked being social, but kind of being in bigger groups, I actually identify, I think, more as like an introvert, but I didn't really like live into that until the pandemic and being with my partner now, because I often would feel like wanting to just be much more of a homebody, but not letting that be. And then in the pandemic, I'm like, and who knows, it could also be age, but I also realized, oh, sometimes I love to just, I don't know, that was a long story, but like, I'm also okay, because I wouldn't want to just stay in my home. I want to go to birthday parties and bachelorettes and some of
well,
it can
have
be
the choice, don't you? It's about choice. It's like believing and knowing that we can. And when we say about, you know, being in rooms with other people and stuff, it's like, it's because it's, again, it's so internal for me. It's like seeing that we're worthy enough to be there, regardless of who we know, who's there, how many people we know. Whether, you know, I know that people will sometimes will be that they won't be comfortable stood on their own without their head in their phone, because it's then I have a purpose. Well, what if your purpose is given? What if just you being there, you're okay to be there regardless of how it looks or how. And I, when you were talking a minute ago, it just very quickly popped in my Google social anxiety, because I always find definitions of things so fascinating, and it straight away comes up with social anxiety disorder. Like, we have to put disorder on the end right. of things. Like, we're really bad. Like, if you're really, really socially awkward, you're disordered. And so social anxiety disorder is there's an overwhelming fear of social situations like meeting or speaking to people. So even the definition of what social anxiety is, for me, is the opposite of the truth, because they're making it about meeting other people when it's nothing to do with those other people. They are innocent in all of this. However they show up, there's nothing to do with them. This is your internal experience and belief about how you are and how you fit and whether you're worthy enough and how you come across. This is internal. This is not. You know, God, how disempowering to think that we could have a disorder where we're totally at the mercy of about meeting and speaking to other people. It's like, thank goodness I know that's now not the case, because that is extremely disempowering, because those other people have zero control over how we feel.
Yeah. Well, and I think also it's in the proof that somebody could feel anxious just thinking about meeting other people. And so it's not the meeting people, it's the thinking.
Yes.
You know, they
it's
can
the
feel
thinking about meeting people. It's the idea of what they're thinking. Let's figure out how they perceive me. And this is how I perceive me. And then I'm going to look to reaffirm, you know, the negatives I see of myself. They're going to prove to me, because they're going to look at me funny, or they're going to walk off and talk to somebody else, which automatically surely means I'm not interesting. Well, actually, you know, no, that's not what that automatically means. But I find it fascinating that we, you know, even by definition, it's about other people. And yet it's a very internal experience.
It is. And I think the wonderful thing is it's internal, and it's also, we're never stuck with something, you know, just because somebody said, well, I've been experiencing social anxiety for my whole life and I have a diagnosis, I have a disorder. You know, I guess it's just like leaving room for hope and for change, because when you have an insight, when you're like, oh my gosh, it's my thinking. And I know I'd heard somebody say this kind of analogy, and I liked it. It's like chasing your tail, but then realizing you're never going to catch it. And kind of, I think you had shared with me, maybe it was like other people's opinions are none of my business. And also when you were sharing how valid we are to show up, you know, I know I've loved people that I've met at parties and gatherings that are just quiet, and you know, they just have this good energy, and they might just give a smile. They're worthy. So then people that are loud and drink too much and laugh and dance and do karaoke, great. Like, there's room for just being, for and everything in between there. And also that one thing that somebody might say is too much. You know, I have been told sometimes that I do talk too much or whatever. Like, that could be somebody's favorite thing. You know, if whatever we think, oh no, I might share too much, I'm loud, or somebody's like, I really am quiet, I like to listen. Whatever we think, you know, could be somebody's just favorite thing. And also that we don't have to be stuck, just as we've said, we can flow between sometimes being the life of the party and sometimes just reflecting. And I know that I give my friends that allowance. Like, I'm not like, oh, Siri was more quiet today, you know, We're so much easier. Like, sometimes with a friend, it's just like talking, laughing. And sometimes it's just a quieter time.
You know, when, I don't know if you've ever seen the phrase, I'm sure it's like not unique to the UK, but the phrase of like, you know, people would say, if you've got to do a talk in front of a lot of people, just to picture in the audience that they're all naked.
Yeah. Or in their underwear. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh no, you've got to be properly naked.
Oh really? They say in their underwear.
But, you know, the whole reason for that, really, if we strip it apart, excuse the pun, is that we are seeing the vulnerability in the people we're afraid of in that moment. Mm. And for me, it's the same with social anxiety. It's like once we start to see that everybody's human. So like I said at the beginning, that yes, I would be the life and soul, but I was anxious. It's not always what you see is what you get. That phrase is not always true. And so, you know, maybe if people knew that vulnerability about me at the time, they might feel more comfortable or more connected or more to me in some way. And I think that's what it is. It's about realizing that no matter how that room appears on the surface, and those people appear on the surface, whatever illusion you've created in your mind, they're all human beings at the core, and they've all got vulnerabilities and insecurities. Doesn't matter who it is, if they're human, they have insecurities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. And I think because obviously we think about ourselves a lot, but and there's nothing wrong with that, you know, but it's all that thinking about ourselves that keep us like sometimes not feeling good. And I know I feel good when I'm just present and I'm not really thinking about myself. Cause when I just get present, whether it's just a one-on-one conversation or I'm in a group, I'm not thinking about myself anymore. Cause when I'm thinking, then I'm just often just feeling separate or telling these stories. And also with that in mind, people are thinking about themselves. You know, they are getting present and they are caring, but often people go home and they're not thinking, oh, if Sari said this, you know, they're thinking about themselves.
Yeah,
and there
absolutely.
Was a quote that I feel like I'm going to say wrong, but it was like the people that matter don't care. Yeah. You know, they're like, oh, you, all right. You know, however, whatever.
Yeah, the people that matter don't mind. The people that do mind don't matter.
Yes. You know, and it's like, if someone's going to write us off for being quiet or being loud or whatever, you know? And I also think sometimes people, I know I used to come off as like mean and cold sometimes if I didn't warm up. And I remember, especially in college, many people would say to my friends, oh, you're friends with Lily? She seems like such a bitch. And I think it was just that, and then, oh my gosh, no, when you get to know her. And I know that that's helped me if sometimes if I notice my judgment of a person, like, oh, she seems so mean, I'm like, oh, maybe she's anxious. Yeah. And not that I have to like have everybody be anxious, but anytime I see somebody, like whether it's at a kid's baseball game or picking up from school, and I think oh, they think they're better than me and they don't like me and they're quiet. And then this voice comes in, oh no, you know, like I remember how I might've looked, unfriendly when I was. And maybe sometimes I can still, if I'm just thinking in my head, you know, if I'm more in my head than in my life. And so, you know, we know this when we're going to make up stories about other people too, just like we never know what they're going through. And I think, I remember this quote, somebody had asked an amazing mystic sage, like, how do we treat others? And he replied, there are no others. And when we think of others, you know, oh, are we going to have the same thoughts on this and on this, you know, maybe even big topics and whatever, like then we feel really separate. And I think it's really fun to just listen deeply and be curious, and you might connect with people that you really wouldn't have thought you would, you know,
you will connect, and it feels good, and it's nice. It's funny you should say about you. People used to always say to me, I thought you were really scary when I met you. People describe me as scary. Like, I'm honestly the least scary person. Like, I don't like confrontation. It's not a comfort zone for me. So to me, it's like, how am I scary? But again, people would perceive my perceived confidence as a little bit intimidating, but it wasn't real. It's like, I wasn't always confident. Sometimes I was putting it on. It was a defense mechanism. Although I am known by one of my nieces who is, she says I'm scary, and I'm quite happy to be scary to her, because the only reason I'm scary is because I have boundaries with her when she pushes, and she's a cheeky monkey. She's delightful, but she pushes, and she's cute, she's gorgeous, she's funny, and everybody gives in to her, and I don't, and so she thinks I'm scary. I was like, well, that's okay. You know, I care, I'm just, it's just a little boundary.
I think it's interesting that you brought up boundaries, because oftentimes, and this is your niece, so she's young, but oftentimes the people that we meet, you know, that we're putting up boundaries, they need them. And if they get upset, they need them even more, you know? And I think in this discussion of social anxiety can come being a people pleaser, you know, where we can get really afraid. I can't put this boundary. I can't say, I don't want to go. You know, that was also something that I think just effortlessly got easier as my understanding, you know, and as my insight, I had more insight to my well-being rose. I got confident being kind and loving, but also looking out for myself and, and my family and my values, where before I would be really caught up in the story of not wanting to offend people, not wanting to have boundaries, not wanting to say no, especially if it was like turning down a family event or something I would.
Or leaving when you're ready to leave. And I mean, how many times I'm terrible, and not now I wouldn't, but in the past I'd be like, I would sneak off and message them later so they weren't worried, but I'm not going to go and tell them I'm going because they might convince me to stay and I don't want to, and I don't want to put a boundary in either. It's like, so I just disappear.
I know. And I remember, I love when people tell me, I'm not feeling great, or or they say no, you know, like, set your boundaries, please. Or my friend Tina once said, it was so long ago, but she said, I haven't got enough bandwidth for hanging out for like 45 minutes. And I was like, oh, I didn't know we could do this, you know? I thought when I get together with my girlfriends, it was like, now you're hanging out for hours. And I think I was afraid to say, well, I'd love to go on a walk for an hour, and kind of even set a limit. Mm-hmm. And actually it's interesting, because I think one thing I love is seeing my friends for a walk or a hike, like right now, because I like to be active and I feel like we talk and I love to see them for lunch. But I think sometimes I would, my default, I should make time for dinner. But as a mom, and in my relationship now, where we have our only night with no children is Friday, and that's a very special time. I know not all parents have it, but I'm more confident saying, I'd love to have a walk, or I'd love to have a hike, and being okay sharing how I'd like to get together. And also knowing that's all going to ebb and flow. Like, we're never stuck. You know, we can, I think our brain can want it to be black and white, and say, well, this is it. This is, but we're always changing our bandwidth for being social. And also I think it can change throughout the night too, where, you know,
we're at the mercy again of our state of mind, aren't we? I shared something yesterday actually with the membership about, something I'd heard Aaron Turner say, and it was about sort of saying, when we're in a lower state of mind, because we were talking about mood yesterday, when we're in a lower state of mind and our thinking is therefore distorted. And I love that what he said was, I love that he used the word propaganda. He said, when we're in a lower state of mind, so our thinking's distorted, all of the thoughts associated with it are just propaganda of a distorted mind.
Yeah.
And I thought, I really like that, because propaganda to me is like, can feel quite forceful, can feel quite convincing, can feel like I'm really quite seduced by propaganda. Oh, should I figure it out? Should I explore it more? But actually, I usually will find out, oh, it's propaganda, therefore I'm going to choose to ignore that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I think when we feel something, it can feel like we are really feeling it, you know, because I also know we can bring into the conversation virtual, and how strange, whether it's a text message or like a virtual thing. Before the pandemic, this was like 11 years ago, so we weren't doing that many. I had not done that many virtual meetings, but I did an interview over Skype, and I was at my summer, so I'm like living with my family, and I felt like there was all these little mistakes that happened, like people coming down and I was trying to gauge, I'm always, or not always really anymore, but I think it's maybe common, but definitely common for me, looking at people's facial expressions, as was much more of a habit too, to kind of gauge, are they approving of me? And there was a panel of three people. And after it, all this propaganda to me, I was like, oh, I bombed. I'm not getting that job. And my whole family, all my aunts and uncles, my dad, you know, everyone's waiting at the beach. So I go over to meet them. How'd it go? I just burst in tears. I was like, oh, I didn't get it. It did not go well. I also chalked it up to the strangeness of the virtual interview, but I was, everyone's like, it's okay. You know, you don't need a job. Another one will come. And I was really feeling sad. It really felt like very true that that did not go. And then I think later that night I got an email and it was, I knew a woman because she had been in my grad school and she's like, oh my gosh, you're our top pick. We just loved you. Do you want the job? And I was so shocked because I thought I had no idea that's where it was going. She said, oh, we loved you. You were our favorite. I was like, and so we are the worst judges when we make up these stories, then all this propaganda and we feel it. Just because we feel something strongly does not mean it's true. We're just feeling our thinking. So we can totally convince ourselves, oh, that job interview was bad. The people didn't like me. And then we can feel it. And it's like, wow, you know, but leaving room for, oh, I'm just feeling my thinking. And if it's feeling bad, it's just letting me know I hopped in the wrong taxi. I'm going to hop off.
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes if I notice after a social event that I'm ruminating, I'm like, oh, wait, this is unnecessary. And if I did something, and if it's a big deal, someone let me know because it's never happened.
No, you know? And you can't change it anyway. Yeah. Like, you know, we can't, especially if, you know, if I've had a drink, there have been times where I'm like, oh God, I wish I'd have just gone home an hour before. Like, you know, and I would never be offensive or hurt anyone or upset anyone, but just be a bit annoying, you know? And it's like, it's okay to go, yeah, actually on reflection, I should have left an hour early and those last two cocktails were not wise type thing. But all we can do is learn from that. But again, for ourselves, not about anybody else, it's for ourselves to go actually, where am I comfortable or where am I not? And actually, ironically, the times where I probably have one too many cocktails are the times where before I got there, I was more anxious than normal.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm drinking quickly and trying to get that comfort from that alcohol really fast because, you know, and then you end up drinking too fast for the rest of the night.
Yeah, yeah. What's helped me, so I drink a lot at a wedding and I hadn't, usually I'll have maybe
a long day though, isn't it? An evening. So it's a really long period of time.
It is. But it was an interesting, cause I probably hadn't drank that much for 16 years since like one of my girlfriends, you know, got married. And I was so impressed and not impressed cause it doesn't matter, but like with my level of functioning that, how much I didn't get stuck in that because what came to me was, I just looked at the bigger picture. Like I'm kind, I'm loving. I had great, I mean, I was, you know, when you drink and I was making connections with my boyfriend's cousins and I'm like, we were moving to Thailand. I was starting, you know, and so I'm there and like getting people's phone numbers. I had plans with his sister-in-law. I'm like, I am embroidering now, like send me all the stuff. So I had a little bit of like cringe, but I think whether you drink or not, one thing that was an insight for me was like, am I kind? You know, all right, sometimes I might be quiet. Sometimes I might talk a lot. Sometimes I might not have included people, like, you know, whatever
my- intentionally, yeah, it's not, it's about doing our best, isn't it?
Yeah, and just the bigger picture of how you show up largely in your life where you're kind, you're loving, you're curious, you had the good intentions. All right, maybe you were quiet or maybe you had one too many drinks. And then we move on. And it's like that there's so much freedom. And it was really cool because after that drinking wedding, I also felt hungover. And it was interesting because I just got present with the hangover. And then sometimes you can be really nauseous and it can be horrible. But I was like, oh, if I'm just in it in this moment, I'm okay. And like my boyfriend loved me. And I was like, oh, I had a lot of drink. He's like, oh yeah, me too. We never had drank that much. And it was fine. It was there. And we just were present with
you know,
the day.
Alcohol is another one that we could do a podcast all about itself. But you know, one thing I've realized since being pregnant and not obviously not drinking for 8 months now, not that I'm counting the days, but yeah, 8 months, is I still wake up often feeling hungover. And I've realized a lot of my hangovers were tiredness and overanalysis and a busy mind.
Yeah.
I'm still having hangovers and I don't drink.
Oh my gosh. I know. I took a melatonin and I had a hangover and I honestly, but then, and I realized my brain did start to kind of freak out and think I'm so tired. I don't know if I can do the day.
Yeah.
And then I just let it go. And then I got present. And then I was like, cause if I'm thinking about the tiredness, cause I was like, my eyes are so tired, you know, and it's, Yeah, we could just do alcohol. We're obviously not saying drink or don't drink or anything. I think
it's also individual people, but I suppose it links into that sort of physiological sensitivity again, is that can be heightened. And then, you know, we then are experiencing that again, even further through our thinking. So it just all links and becomes part of the cycle. And the way you could talk about hormones, has an effect, you know, what we eat, what we do, you know, everything. So if we were to wrap this up then, what would be your parting words for someone that believes they have social anxiety and it's a problem for them?
Well, I would leave the past in the past, you know, because each day is a fresh new day, you know. Just because you felt socially anxious at the last event, this has no bearing, you know? And so I think I love that phrase that you bring in, until now, I had a little social anxiety, not minimizing the pain that it can cause and the impact it can have on work and social life. But I love that phrase, until now, leaves room for hope, and also leaving out that disorder, the diagnosis, because when it kind of this seriousness, well, I have this diagnosis and it's this disorder. It's like, whose side are you on? Like, we're showing you hope is like, you know, even if you have a diagnosis, that's just where you were. And that's just also a doctor trying to put a common language. If it was helpful for you to realize, great. But like, transformation is built into us. And also, it doesn't have to be black or white. As we've been talking about, I feel very like, quote unquote, normal, very mentally healthy, great, like who I would have envied for most of my life. And before I'm going to a new social event, sometimes my thinking is ramped up, but I just leave it. I don't really add on. Now I went on. So my tips would be, I think the biggest one is that, and just to also be light, be easy, and to know that you're really just feeling your thinking. And anytime you're not feeling good, that's not talking about anything about people's thoughts about you or how well you're doing. It's just letting you know you hopped in a yucky taxi that's not headed anywhere good. And it's just an invitation to get present. Yeah. And people also, if you are nervous, they love to talk about themselves a lot. So if you like, just listen and have fun. What about you? What would you say?
I think one of the biggest things for me, which sounds really simple, is just being open-minded to the fact that what if, and I know it's not always easy for people to just believe in themselves, but just be curious or open-minded to it. What if you were just as worthy as every other single person in that room? How different an experience you might have. And it might not come easy. And that's why I say, just be open-minded to what if. Or just be curious that if I was as worthy, would it be as much of an issue? If I felt I was equal and worthy, would I be having this struggle in my mind? Would I be suffering in this way? Because I think that's ultimately what it comes down to.
That's really wonderful. You know what? I know we're wrapping it up, but I had a lot of that. I would compare and feel way less than the mothers at my kids' private school. I just felt like that. And two of my best friends now, we hike every Friday. I just love them. And I did put them on a pedestal because I thought all of these reasons why they were so much better than me. And we talk in like, and I do feel equal to them. I feel like we're just enough.
You are equal to them.
And they have their own insecurities. But I think, wow, if I had thought that, just what you shared, going in to pick up my kids from school, going to the parent events at that school, what if I was just as worthy? Like, that really would have changed a lot, you know, and I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Good. Could also talk about imposter syndrome next time if we haven't already.
I know, one of my favorite subjects. So yeah,
just what made me think of for that one.
Yeah. So we'll wrap it up there. Thank you for those of you that are still listening and still with us. And we will hopefully be back with you very soon for another one. Bye for now.
Yeah. Bye.